Hello and welcome to Cage Club, two fans, 73 movies, one cage. Today's movie is Red Rock West from 1993. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And Mike, you finally got, you finally got your cage western.
Yeah, I noticed that.
It's not like a traditional western, like it's not of the era like The Boy in Blue was, as you called that, an eastern. But it is, for a lot of intents and purposes, a western, and sort of in story, in style, in cinematography, in just about everything. It's just sort of like a modern-day Western.
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. It's a modern-day Western. Cage as the cowboy of today.
He's the outsider who enters town, and just things happen to him. This movie was written and directed by this guy, John Dahl, who has really become like a real, real powerhouse TV director. I don't know if you checked his IMDb credits, but he's directed episodes of shows, like tons of shows that I love. Hannibal and Justified and House of Cards, Terriers and Breaking Bad and Battlestar Galactica. Like, he did a couple movies early in his career and then sort of moved to TV shows. I really, really love the visual style of this, and I think it translates really well into these sort of darker, heavier TV shows.
Not to show my hand too much up front, but I enjoyed this movie. I really liked the way he directed it, the tone he laid down, the style that he did, and the way he was able to maintain that.
All of his little touches are nice in terms of, I think it really does help. Like, if you're sort of competent at what you're doing when you write the script, and I think he wrote it with his brother. When you write the script and you're like a good director, you know, like you're writing it with your vision in mind, you're able to execute it. So he's got this thing that he knows inside and out, and I think it really sort of shows on screen.
Yeah, writer-director combination like that, you can sense the control that he has over the story and the movie and the pace. And, you know, it feels distinct. It feels like almost like an auteur work or something like that.
And this guy also directed Rounders. And thinking about it, like, I haven't seen Rounders in a while, but that is another sort of dark, character-driven movie.
Well, not only did I feel like this felt like a modern Western, it almost has the sense of like a neo-noir to it as well. You know, I was getting flashes of Blood Simple or No Country for Old Men or things of that nature as well.
The movie takes place in Wyoming. Cage is this man from Texas, and he just rolls into town looking for work. And so that whole Western feel, you know, like your neo-noirs, like your No Country, but also just set in the 1800s Westerns, it all sort of has that same kind of vibe, which I love.
Yeah, and when he rolls into Red Rock, it feels like a one-horse town, or even like a modern-day ghost town, which most ghost towns are sort of based off of the old West villages that were abandoned long ago.
The movie starts and you see Cage's legs in a car, and he's just in the middle of a road, and I was like, is this the road? Do you think this is the road from Never on Tuesday? Like, they've driven from Ohio, out through Indiana, through Illinois. Even though they're going to California, maybe they sort of veered north a little bit and wound up in Wyoming, and they drove down this road. Cage is just there. He has a new ailment. He had that cut on his hand in Time to Kill. He's had lots of teeth problems, but in this, he's got a knee issue. But again, Cage in action, he got it while fighting in Vietnam. I feel like Cage is just of the age where all of his characters are always going to be based in the origin of Vietnam.
Yeah, he's in the demographic. He's got the look that can play that age and that period. Well, we talked about how sort of timeless his image is. There's a lot of Cage connections going on here right off the bat. You know, stranded on the side of a road. He's an ex-Marine. We've had a Marine before. And we get a repeat here of the very first thing we've ever seen Nick Cage do on camera.
Yep.
One-armed push-ups.
Shirtless one-armed push-ups.
Shirtless as well.
Just like he was doing on the beach in Best of Times. He is in the middle of the road.
Yeah, he's sort of this drifter, and it looks like he drove as far as he could before nightfall and pulled over on the side of the road. Wait till the morning to go the rest of the way.
And he just, you know, what better way to kill the time than with a couple one-armed push-ups?
I just pictured them, you know, filming on the side of the road. They got pretty much everything, and they're like, all right, you know, your character's waking up. What would you do? Nick Cage, what do you do in the morning? And Nick was probably like, I do one-armed push-ups. So, you know, I'm wondering if he's the one that got this in the movie.
Cage rolls into town. He's not in Red Rock yet. He's in a town like about 50 miles away. Has a friend in town who's supposed to get him this job, but it's because of his leg and because Cage... And Cage's real downfall throughout this entire movie is that he's just, like, too nice and too honest. Like, a lot of these characters he's been playing recently, a lot of criminals and stuff, he's very deceptive and he's a liar. But in this, he's almost too honest, and that sort of gets him into trouble.
Yeah, he's almost the moral center of the film in a lot of ways, yeah. You know? Like, yeah, he's the good guy. And we'll find out, like, the one time that he sort of tries not to be himself, shall we say, that's what sort of snowballs him into all the trouble that comes along.
He misses out on this job, and he asks his friend, hey, do you know of any other opportunities? He says, go to this town, Red Rock, and he gets to a gas station, and...
Is it the guy at the gas station that says you might want to try Red Rock?
Oh, maybe it is.
And it, because it brought up those feelings of, like, a horror film at that moment for me, where you sort of, you have the guy on the outskirts of town who's, like, warning guy, you know, the guy is like, you know, you're going to that town, you better be careful, or, you know, the harbinger of doom, right?
Right.
And this guy totally gave me that vibe, where he's like, you ought to try Red Rock, and I'm like, they're going to turn you into ground chuck, man, they're going to eat you alive.
I feel like if Cage, because the big moral dilemma in this scene is that Cage sees the register full of money. Cage only has $5 to his name at this point. He sees, like, the till of money or the register of money just open and just bills are exposed and no one is around. He has this sort of debate, his internal debate, as to whether or not he should steal the money, and he doesn't. And I feel like if he had and he sort of got away with it, then this harbinger of doom would have been more foreboding, because we see him as a bad guy. Mm. But as a good guy, I feel like karma is at least a little bit on his side, and he does come into a lot of trouble in Red Rock, but he's not murdered. Spoiler alert, gets out of the movie alive. So he finally makes his way to Red Rock, right? And he goes into this bar, and the bartender is this guy, Wayne.
He's sort of an onion. Like, things about him get revealed throughout the film.
Cage gets to this bar that J.T. Walsh, who unfortunately died 5 years after this movie came out, he was in a ton of big movies in the 90s. He was in, like, The Negotiator. He was in Outbreak. He was in a whole bunch of different stuff. Cage shows up to this bar, sits down. Wayne, the bartender, sees that Cage has Texas license plates and says, you're here for the job, right? And I was like, ooh, like a wrong man plot. This is, like, sort of like a kind of, like, especially, like, in terms of noir, like you were saying before, a common story type. But it's one that we haven't seen yet in Cage Club.
Yeah, and they double down on the noir here, too. He thinks that Nick Cage is Lyle from Dallas because he sees the plates, and Nick Cage is sort of just assuming that the guy is offering him a bartending job. So they're sort of not on the same page, and then they go in the back room, and Wayne explains what he wants done. He wants his wife murdered, which is like super-duper noir part two, you know? That was just the icing on the cake for me.
Cage is Lyle from Dallas, but actually plays a guy named Michael Williams. So he's a hitman, and in the sense of the noir, we find out, or we quickly meet Femme Fatale, Laura Flynn Boyle, who is Wayne's wife, who plays a woman named Suzanne, or people call her Susie. It's a little bit kind of a Cage connection. It's like 6 degrees of Cage connections, because she was one of the stars of Twin Peaks. Just from recently from Zondali, Erica Anderson was a similar type of character as Laura Flynn Boyle in Twin Peaks.
And there's definitely a strange weirdo vibe about, like, the whole town and everyone in it, and everybody is sort of lying to everybody else, and there's all this facade, and there's a big mystery surrounding everything. So I definitely got, you know, a little tint of Twin Peaks here, too. It would be around this time. Its influence would sort of bleed into a lot of the work being produced.
And one of the big groups of characters in this movie is the local law enforcement. And what I really liked, this sort of gave me a Twin Peaks vibe, too, is that they're not incompetent buffoons like they were in Amos and Andrew, right? Mm-hmm. They're just kind of, like, simple, good folks who have, like, a small town. This whole, like, murder plot or, like, planned murder plot unfolds in front of them. And they're just sort of not equipped to handle it based on their small-town experience, just sort of like in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, but getting back to the ranch real quick, it's kind of cool that there's this ranch because it reminded me of Westerns, you know? And this was definitely, you know, one of the crossover elements for me. I was like, well, this is so interesting. I really, like, when have you ever, like, what takes place on a ranch these days, really? Like, nothing.
Nothing.
So, like, that was really cool to see. And also just that I liked how Cage drives a white car. It's sort of like a white horse.
The man in white, as opposed to Lyle Dennis Hopper, who we actually meet a little bit later, who's always in black, and he's like the man in black, like it's literal depictions of good and evil.
Yeah, and he's even listening to the man in black himself, Johnny Cash, at the time. But, yeah, so when they're at the ranch, the Lord, he I love this move. Like, this is the coolest thing. Like, this is when I knew this movie was going to keep sort of surprising me. I'm going to see stuff I haven't seen before. He tells Laura Flynn Boyle, like, your husband sent me to murder you. You know, he offered me $5,000 now and $5,000 later. And she's like, you know what? Like, I'll double it if you murder him. Just that was, like, such a cool little twist early on.
And Cage was like, all right.
I don't know how to tell you this, but your husband, Wayne, he plans to have you murdered.
This is a joke, right?
I'm afraid not. Paid me to do it.
Well, what are you gonna do?
I don't know. I hate to see an innocent woman get hurt, but it's an awful lot of money.
And that's sort of the only driving factor. Just because he's broke, he's not a bad guy. He's just in a bind financially. And he sees a way to basically get $15,000 and get out of town before anything really bad happens.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how he's almost already trying to go back on his mistake in a little bit, you know? Like, he accepted this job that wasn't his, and then he gets to the mark and he tells her, I'm supposed to kill you. Like, it's weird. Like, he's already trying to unfold the damage that he started to cause, in a way.
The way he tries to, like, undo the damage that he's caused, he's just going to leave town. Like, he's got his car, he's got gas money now, he's just going to get out of town. And he goes to the gas station, and I was like, way to fly under the radar. He spends, like, $120 at a gas station on just all the food in the place, and then goes out to his car and writes a note to the sheriff and says, hey, someone was hired to kill this woman, and she wants to kill him. Not going to say who I am, but, like, I know all this stuff. You might want to look into it, basically.
Again, like, what a strange move, like, I never would have thought of. He writes a letter to the cops about what he just got mixed up in. This isn't a comedy, but, like, it's one of those funny person moments, like, a character trait of his that it fully forms him a little more as a character for me. Like, he did something like that. I never would have thought of it. And I don't know. It just seems, like, so strange.
I think it just goes back to the fact that he's, like, a genuinely good guy, right? Mm-hmm. That he sees this evil in the world and doesn't know what to do about it. Like, he knows it's above and beyond his scope of abilities, who can handle it, but, you know, the local police. So he's going to write them a note. Hopefully people don't die by the time that the cops get the note and do something about it. In terms of, you know, his moral center, he has all this money that he shouldn't have. It's like being rewarded for doing a good deed. Hey, this guy wants to kill his wife. I'm going to let people know, and I'm just going to take this $15,000 sort of as a finder's fee.
We never really talk about, like, his being a Marine yet. It kind of comes into play a little bit later on, but I was sort of thinking about that during this. You know, we know very in the beginning we find out he was a Marine just from his tattoo, really. But I wondered if, like, this is some type of survival skill that he learned or something, you know? Like, is he in survival mode now? Like, is that, like, what clicked in, and is that why he's just sort of getting out of town? I don't know. A lot of things are just starting to run through my mind at this point of the movie.
The next logical thing for him to do after he has sort of uncovered this murder plot, has taken the money, has written the notice, he's going to leave town. All he really wants to do throughout all this entire movie is just leave town. He wants to get on with his life, move on, and find a job somewhere else. But on his way out of town, there's a man stopped on the side of the road, and he's trying to wave him down, and Cage isn't necessarily paying attention, and he just rams right into the guy.
Yeah, I got a bit of a callback to Wild at Heart with the accident on the side of the road. It's just like, oh, accidents. Man, you don't stop. But yeah, the guy, like, jumped out into the road. It's raining. Like, there's zero visibility. What was this guy thinking in the first place? Pretty sure they teach you that's not how you get someone's attention. Don't jump. Don't ever jump into the middle of the street, because, yeah, Cage just plows the guy over. Good guy again, like, scoops him up, puts him in the car, drives him back to Red Rock, and brings him to the hospital.
Now, here's a question for you, and I'm not sure where in terms of the timeline this falls in. The guy that he hit was, like, the ranch hand for Laura Flynn Boyle's house, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when he gets to the hospital, it turns out that he's been shot, and Cage is wanted for questioning in this shooting. But, like, was he shot when he was waving Cage down?
That's the only conclusion I was able to draw. I have the same questions about this that you do, and I was like, did someone come into the hospital and shoot him twice after his surgery? I was like, how did this happen? Yeah, the guy is, like, looks like he's changing a tire, and then is, like, jumping up and down. So when they say they pulled these two bullets out of him, I was like, well, that's odd, or he's being set up somehow, and like there really weren't bullets in this guy. But there were really bullets. This guy really was shot. So it's, yeah, it's strange.
There really were bullets, and like later in the movie, we get confirmation from the character who shot him that, yes, he was shot. So I just don't know when, because exactly what you were saying, it looks like he's changing a tire, he's very active in the road, he's not doubled over in pain. As we learn in Time to Kill, it's like one of the most painful ways to die out, right?
Yeah.
And that's why he had to put that woman out of her misery. So I don't know when he was shot, or why exactly he was shot. I really don't know. Or maybe in this guy's awful, awful life, he uncovers this great plan, right, about who these people in this town really are, gets shot twice in the stomach, tries to get out of town, then his car breaks down, he pulls over to the side of the road to change the tire, sees help coming, not only doesn't get help, but gets creamed by this car. So, I mean, like, that's sort of like a slapsticky kind of sequence of events, but that, I guess that could have maybe happened?
It's a bit much, but I'll tell you what, in the realm of, like, sort of noir fiction, there are indestructible characters, you know? They're like these guys that can just take a beating and keep on ticking, you know? So maybe he's a reference to that type of character, like this guy who's been shot twice, hit by a car, and still won't die, you know? He's hanging on until he can see the guilty party go to jail. I don't know, because what you said is the only plausible chain of events, really. I mean, unless there was two guys in the hospital, and by coincidence, the guy Nick Cage hit with a car, they bring him to the hospital, and then there's the guy who was shot twice in his stomach in the next room, and they pin that on Cage to sort of do a rope-a-dope and, you know, get him locked up and out of town.
I don't know. Like, I don't think that necessarily makes sense, but, like, my sequence of events doesn't really make sense. And ultimately, this is a character, he never has a line, right? Like, we never see him in the movie, and he survives this whole thing. So, like, it's just weird. Like, this is such a really genuinely good, interesting movie. This is like so muddled. Like, I wonder if there was like a scene that was cut out, but like things don't necessarily add up. I don't think they don't add up because it's meant to be intentionally confusing. The editing or the writing or whatever here just kind of dropped the ball.
Yeah, I agree with that because the rest of it is really tight and really well done. And, you know, you can see, I don't know, at least I felt the time put into it to make it not seem like a coincidence that this guy Wayne is everything. You know what I'm saying? Like all the different things like that. Like, so it felt like a well-crafted story and script and everything. So I don't know, something just got lost in the shuffle about the farmhand.
Cage brings this body that the guy he hits to the hospital. Once again, is sort of weighing his moral dilemma, moral decisions. Is about to leave the hospital when the doctor comes out and says, "Hey, I need to talk to you." And they call the cops, and the cops show up, and the cops are sort of again in over their heads, like we need to bring the sheriff in on this one. And that's when the sheriff shows up, and of course, like it's a huge bombshell. It's sort of, you sort of expect it, I guess, in terms of the movie, but like not in terms of this movie. Like, it's set up so well that the sheriff is the guy who was also the bartender who paid Cage to kill his wife. That's such a huge moment and so surprising, genuinely surprising.
I'm not even kidding. When the sheriff walked into the hospital with his hat covering his head, I wrote down, "Here comes Dennis Hopper." Because I'd never seen this movie before.
Right.
I thought Dennis Hopper was going to be like the badass sheriff or something like that. And then he like lifts his hat up and it's Wayne. And yeah, I was like, oh shit, like you're so screwed. You know, the movie worked on me, totally. I believe Wayne tells the deputies that he'll take them in, he'll drive him downtown and book him, and you know he'll get him all processed and everything like that. But instead, he drives him to the outskirts of Red Rock and pulls over and like places the handcuff key on the dashboard, and it doesn't say anything. But Nick Cage knows like immediately. It's like, I gotta make it look like you escaped before I shoot you to death situation.
Right.
So it's almost like a standoff, right? It's almost like a shootout, an Old West type deal. Like very slowly, he grabs the key and like starts to unlock it, and then when Wayne pulls his gun, Cage like dips out of the car door and kicks the car door at Wayne's hand and stuff. Yeah, it's a really cool like little escape maneuver he does. He must have learned that in the Marines.
What I like about this scene and a lot of things throughout this movie is that the characters in the movie and in the scene in particular sort of know the tropes kind of the genre. Like he knows what he's getting into. Like a lot of Western movies, a lot of characters get framed for, like, fake escapes, right? And then that's how the cops justify killing them. And it's kind of cool that, like, Cage realizes this. It shows his intelligence as a character, but also it respects the audience. That's not this thing that you've seen in every movie. It's like the guy has seen every movie and knows how, or knows what's coming and knows how to handle the situation.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, too, you know, and it just speaks volumes to the screenwriter as well, where he's just not holding the audience's hand. You know, he respects the audience and gives them the benefit of the doubt and everything, and, you know, yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but it totally falls into place watching this movie.
The movie sort of features cliches, but, like, features them in a way to give you a sense of where we are and what's going on, but then plays on them in a way that, like, few other movies have sort of done, and especially, you know, few other movies have done this well as this far in Cage Club.
Yeah, even Laura Flynn Boyle as the femme fatale, like, she's not exactly what you would think of as your, like, her behavior in this film isn't exactly typical femme fatale, but she's got the look, and towards the end, she almost grows into that character in a sense, you know? The more she's on screen, the more dangerous, like, it's revealed that she is by the end.
Yeah, she's almost, like, the biggest bad guy of them all, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So as Cage escapes from Wayne, he's limping down the highway. He almost gets hit by a car and sort of the ultimate reversal of fate. Out of the car pops the guy that Mike thought might be the sheriff, but Dennis Hopper himself.
What the fuck are you doing? And my car broke down.
Where? I don't see a car.
It's just over that ridge.
Over that ridge, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you're one lucky son of a bitch, aren't you? Huh? If I hadn't had my brakes just done, I'd be picking your brains out of my radiator. Fuck.
Listen, I hate to ask you this, but do you think you could give me a ride?
Oh, I don't know. You aren't dangerous, are you?
No. I just need a ride. You can drive me off at the nearest gas station.
Okay, cowboy, you got yourself a ride. Well, get in.
So if Nick Cage is the white cowboy, the man in white, then Dennis Hopper as Lyle from Dallas is the man in black here. And by that I mean, like, not only is he dressed all in black, but he's in a black car listening to Johnny Cash, the man in black, and he even bears sort of a resemblance to Johnny Cash at the time. He's based his look off of the man in black for real.
He gave me the vibe just kind of Michael Madsen in Tarantino movies, just like this likable, real cool, gruff looking bad guy. You know is a bad guy and you know you're not supposed to like, but he's so just charming and entertaining that it's hard not to like him.
Yeah, you definitely get the sense that he's dangerous, but as long as you sort of keep everything friendly, you know, and like, you know, keep it all light with this dude, he'd probably be like a really good friend to you down the line somehow.
The two of them, Cage and Dennis Hopper, quickly bond because they both find out that they're former Marines, so they got that Semper Fi connection. Cage just wants to get out of town. He's like, hey, just drop me at my car. I just want to get out of here. I just, you know, my car broke down up there. I was walking around. And Dennis Hopper's like, no. Let me buy you a drink. Like, I owe you a drink. You're a veteran. I'm a veteran. And Cage sort of realizes the only bar in town is this one owned by Wayne. And he's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, Dennis Hopper really gives him, like, that's what I'm talking about, where, like, if you stay on his good side, he'll probably be nice to you. Because when Cage, like, refuses a beer, you see, like, this look in Dennis Hopper's eyes, like, I've killed people for not having a drink with me before and things like
yeah.
that.
He's like, am I not good enough to have a drink with you? Is that what you're saying? Cage is like, no. Again, just too nice. Cage could essentially, like, tell this guy to screw off, right, and get out of town. And assuming he's not going to kill him on the side of the road, his niceness, it's again to a fault, and he gives in and he goes into this bar where he fully expects to see the guy who was just about to take him out to the field and just put a bullet in his head is going to be behind the bar. But luckily enough for Cage, he's not.
Yeah, the bar is actually like kind of swinging and crowded and great because Dennis Hopper sits down and he's like, tell Wayne Lyle from Dallas is here. And it's just like, oh my God. Cage is like, oh geez, I better really get the hell out of here before my best friend's dad from Rumblefish kills me.
Cage and bars, just like Cage in New Orleans and Cage in Las Vegas, don't get along. He was in a bar in Wild at Heart when Bobby Peru convinced him to rob that bank, right? Like, he always gets himself into these bars, into these situations where just nothing good comes of it.
Yeah, he should just stay away from alcohol in general because a few movies down the line, it gets him into some serious trouble for real.
They sit down and Lyle's like, you know, I'm Lyle from Dallas. And the bartender's like, oh, Wayne's not here, but I can call him if you want. He's like, that would be great. And so Cage knows he needs to get out of there in a hurry, so excuses himself to the bathroom, and Wayne shows up, and Cage sneaks out the window. This is one of the scenes in the movie that where it's just like genuine, like real tension, and you really don't know whether he's going to get caught here and he's going to have to fight his way out of a corner again, or if he's going to get away. And then if he does get away, what is that going to mean for him and for his character?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite scenes of the movie. A lot of stuff kind of happens real quickly. Like, his new best friend, Lyle, just became, like, his new worst enemy. He knows, like, he's got, like, not one, but two guys after him, and he knows how crazy both of them are. So I love it. And it's so great, like, how he's, like, hiding on the roof, too. This just feels like a Western again, you know, something that would happen in one of those films.
So he sneaks out of the bathroom through the window and climbs up to the roof. And I got a kind of a, you know, Racing with the Moon or a Birdie vibe. Like, he spent a lot of time on roofs in his career so far. Like, there's no options, because, like, they're in this Western town. This seems like the only building within, you know, walking distance. But there's a truck there delivering beer, and Cage takes a plank of wood, extends it from the roof to the top of the truck, and walks away and sneaks and lays down on top of the truck, and escapes just as Dennis Hopper has the idea to go up and check the roof.
Like, I love the ingenuity of this. I mean, where would the screenwriter even come up with this idea? Like, it's just so unique. I could truly, I've never seen this in a movie before. Like, it definitely feels like, I was saying, like, it connotes a Western vibe to it, you know, especially since Dennis Hopper's, like, wearing a cowboy hat and Nicolas Cage is wearing cowboy boots and they're after each other. But the whole idea of, like, balancing on the plank and walking, oh man, just like walking from the roof to the hood of the car and everything. I just loved it. I don't know. It was just really good imagery and, like you said, like genuine tension.
I feel like I've seen this kind of thing in other movies or TV shows, but I think anything I've seen it in came after this. I can't think of any situations or movies or whatever where this happened that came before this. It just shows how, like, the ingenuity of John Dahl. It reminds me of, and I think we might have talked about it on a previous podcast, it reminds me of, like, the Breaking Bad writers who have an idea, like, they're going to get somebody into a corner, going to get them to, like, this real, real tough spot, and then they have to figure out, like, they have to prove to themselves, basically, okay, how is he going to get out of this?
You know what even makes it better is, like, it's not even truly, like, an escape. Like, a minute later, when the trucker's driving down the road, Nick Cage, like, makes him aware that he's on the roof of his car and, like, flags him down, tells him to pull over. And the guy has a gun. Like, he's a mean dude. Like, he's like, I ain't scared of you, man. You're crazy being up on someone's truck like this. Like, you're going to get yourself killed. Like, Cage is just right back into hot water, you know? Like, his escape plan. Like, now he's got to escape from his escape plan. But the guy actually turns out to, once everything is sort of straightened out, I know Cage gives him this story about getting away from his old lady, which,
yeah,
just like the worst lie. But again, like, the trucker, that's all he needs to hear. Cage is in trouble. He's not going to tell him the truth. It's like we said, like, even the truck driver has seen all of the tropes and all the movies. Like, he doesn't need Cage to tell him anything else. He knows he's in trouble. And
what the hell are you doing on my truck?
Sorry, boss. I didn't mean to scare you.
Hey! I look scared to you? What the hell are you doing on my truck?
Well, I was just trying to ditch my old lady.
You were what?
Yeah, she caught me in the barn and I wasn't supposed to be there. She started sprouting horns and shit.
Bullshit. Bullshit. Look at that uncontrolled response to bullshit. I hate when that happens.
Yeah, I don't like it either, but you know, I just had to get the hell out of there.
So you come out and climbed up on my truck?
Yeah.
That's kind of stupid, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but you've never met my wife. Spooky.
Again, like, once again, and I keep bringing this up, like, this is a moment where Cage, like, he's too nice of a guy. Like, this truck driver will have no problem just driving him out of town. He's got a problem with his old lady or whatever. He'll just get him out of town. But instead, he feels compelled to save Laura Flynn Boyle. So he has the trucker drop him off at her ranch and say, hey, that guy that I pretended I was before who was hired to kill you, well, he's in town now, you better get out of here. He sneaks into her house for the second time, and she's already packing. Like, she knows that there's a hit out on her life, and she just wants to get out of town. And he sneaks in, and she freaks out. He's like, you gotta get out of town now. Like, I know you're thinking that you have a little bit of time, but he's like, you gotta get out now. In the middle of this conversation, Dennis Hopper shows up to the house and lets himself in with the key. It's realistic. Like, Dennis Hopper is clearly a professional hitman. Like, he's not messing around. He's going to go do the job. He's going right there, and it just adds to the scene that they're basically in a race to get to Laura Flynn Boyle's house.
Yeah, I love the idea that that Lyle from Dallas like gave up on trying to find Cage and was like, all right, well, back to like the first priority. Like, let me go to the ranch and take care of the old lady, you know? And, yeah, and then when he shows up, doesn't he get brained with, what is that? Anyway, it looked like
it's like a statue paperweight. Laura Flynn Boyle, Cage tells her to hide outside, and then he goes into her like master bathroom and starts running the water, and Dennis Hopper walks up, and I thought he was going to like Cage was going to hit him on the head with it, but instead he just like chucks this heavy statue at Dennis Hopper's head and knocks him out. It looks like it's way heavier than should be thrown, and it's kind of, I guess, a little bit a moment of humor in this otherwise pretty dark movie. Normally I think the guy would just like club him, a darker guy or a more evil guy might just keep continuing to hit him until the guy bleeds out. But instead, Cage, I guess a little in over his head, just throws the statue at him and just knocks him out.
And I also love his sort of instincts, too. Like, he doesn't think twice, and he knocks out Dennis Hopper and sort of gives him one to grow on, right? Like, he just knocks him in the face with a fist just to make sure he's out cold.
Yeah.
He's not a murderer, so he's like, come on, we got to get out of here before this guy wakes up. And I'm thinking, like, you know, if it was me, I'd be like, kill the guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, get rid of this man. But again, like, his morals, like, come through, you know? Again, like, he knew he'd slipped up that one time, and it caused all this trouble. So he's definitely doing his darn not to cause any more problems. Yeah, and then they go to escape in the Jeep, and story of his life, Jeep's out of gas, right?
Fucking story of my life.
They pull over to a gas station, and he's getting gas, and he's got like $80 left. The $5,000 from Wayne, the $10,000 from Laura Flynn Boyle, it's all in the glove compartment of his car, which is not with him anymore. He's like, we can still get out of town, I still have $80 in my name, like let's just get out of here. And they get to the gas station. I buy sort of the stupidity of this moment because Cage's character is so grounded, but they get to this gas station, and then Laura Flynn Boyle just starts walking off, and he's like, where are you going? And she's like, oh, I'm thirsty. I'm going to go to the bar.
Yeah, well, she is playing him. We don't know exactly yet. He thinks she doesn't deserve to be killed by her husband, when in fact she kind of... I'm not one to judge, but by the movie standard, she kind of does deserve to die in a way. Yeah, she's definitely like... pulling the strings on Nick Cage at this, and she's like, let's go to the bar, and she starts to sort of seduce him, you know? Like, she wants to compromise him.
She does want to compromise him, and then in the next scene, they do compromise each other. As they're walking out of the bar, Cage is like, I'm okay to drive, like, let's just get out of town. She's like, I got other ideas, and just in the background, maybe a little bit of product placement, but I'm okay with it. There's just a Comfort Inn sign, and she's like, let's go to the Comfort Inn. And so they go there, and she comes out in this lingerie outfit.
It's
like,
where does she wear? Well, she was not wearing that under her like equestrian clothes, because she's wearing like these clothes like she was out riding a horse all day. She cannot wear that under those clothes, do they?
No, but she. I mean, she was packing those suitcases, so I guess this is just like, you know, one of the most important things to pack when you're going to be on the lam is just sexy underwear. I guess in case you have to seduce someone.
She tells Cage why Wayne wants her dead, or at least her version of the whole story. Something about she came into like this inheritance, and Wayne is used to spending, and she sort of tried to give him an allowance of some kind, and like he's going to offer to get the inheritance money. We talk about how like the characters are sort of one step ahead of the tropes of the film, and this was like the one time where I felt Nick Cage's character should have been like, she's a liar, she's lying, like she's not, like, because I sort of saw through that right away.
But I think he's too like honest and trustworthy and too nice of a guy to really question her. Like, to him, she's just a damsel in distress, the wrongful target of this murder plot. And he's going to believe her because, like, why wouldn't he believe her? Like, she's, as far as he's concerned, the victim in this scenario.
What she does next is sort of I felt that was kind of out of left field, too, but I liked it. She wants to go back to Red Rock. Surprise, surprise. Cage just cannot get out of Red Rock. And she wants to steal the money back from Wayne, right? Like, the $5,000 or $10,000.
She wants to get out of town. She wants to go to Mexico. She's like, now that it's just us two, like, let's make a clean break of it. Let's go to Mexico. But for us to do that, we need money. But lucky for us, I know where that money is. And in Wayne's office, there's like a safe below his desk. I think it's $500,000, because eventually Dennis Hopper shows up there. He's asking Wayne where the $500,000 is. But what actually is in the safe is just like $5,000 or $10,000. There's money there, but not nearly what she thought. And she's like visibly disappointed when they open the safe and find that this is not the make a new life money that they thought they were going to find.
Cage is sort of fine. He's like, all right, whatever. Like, let's just get out of here. And she just is the one who's like, no, right? Like, there's supposed to be more. And then Wayne is back, and I loved it. They go and they hide in a closet, and for one of the only times in a movie, I do not mind people hiding in the closet. Like, it just worked for me for some reason.
And then also for one of the only times in a movie, the people hiding in the closet don't get caught.
This is the part I had to watch twice, because this is sort of like an info dump. His two deputies arrive.
Right.
And they say, we found this on the guy in the hospital who had two gunshots to the belly and was hit by a car. This was in his pocket. They unfold it, and they're like, we called the FBI. You should come down with us, Wayne, or should I call you Kevin? And they all sort of leave the room, and that's when...
And you're like, what's going on?
Yeah, and it's like the next big twist, and I was like, oh man, like, this is so awesome.
Yeah, so the deputies basically arrest Wayne and bring him downtown, and Cage and Laura Flynn Boyle walk out of the closet, and Cage goes over and picks up this note, and it's a wanted by the FBI, again, to go back to the Western vibe and the Western motifs. It's basically a wanted poster. Mm-hmm. Laura Flynn Boyle and Wayne, both of them, wanted for stealing $1.9 million. And she immediately starts a backlash. She's like, wait. I can explain.
Yeah, she's like, it's him, right? Like, it's all him, it's not me, I just went along with it.
We were married, and I loved him, and he did this, and I wanted to support him. But I'm not a bad guy.
And so the plan, I guess, what they did was they stole this money, they moved to, or they went to Red Rock. Did they murder the sheriff and the wife? Did I hear something about unsolved mystery? There's like a cold case about a murdered couple or something. What I thought that they did was they came, they set up shop in Red Rock, they bought the election. He set himself up as the new sheriff. I guess he never thought he was going to get caught.
There's really no reason for them to get caught, because they roll into town. I guess the first thing they do is probably buy the bar, win over goodwill, buy everybody drinks. He's now this beloved hero, gets elected sheriff. As far as they all know, he's just like a good guy who just new to town, came in with money, and just like wants to basically make the town better. But for them, it's this town out in the middle of nowhere, essentially, you know, hillbilly folk who don't know the FBI's most wanted. And it's a place that they can lay low and just sort of have, like, a relatively normal life.
I love that. Like, I don't know what it is, but there's something about the way everything sort of fell into place in this moment. Just reconfirmed my like of this movie.
So as Laura Flynn Boyle is backpedaling and trying to defend herself to Cage, they're really sort of their first kind of fight, right?
Yeah.
And she has the plan, and Cage is not the same page as her in terms of the plan.
There's supposed to be $500,000 in that safe. He must have moved it. We can find it, Michael. We can be together. We can go to Mexico.
Fuck Mexico!
There's no way you're going to get Cage to Mexico. He likes Canada if he needs to lay low somewhere. And then Lyle shows up. It's like just every turn you take, like, he's there. It's, you know, like, he's definitely just like waiting. Like, I don't know, he's like this creeper, Grim Reaper type guy who's like roaming around the town.
The Grim Creeper.
There you go.
Cage and Laura Flynn Boyle go to leave, and they open the door. And I think basically he says, surprise, and like punches Cage in the face and knocks Cage out. And then, like, 2.5 hours pass. Dennis Hopper learns the full story, and now he's got a new plan in town. He's no longer here just to make, you know, 10 grand or 20 grand killing this woman. He's going to find this 500 grand, wherever it may be, and he's going to leave town a lot more wealthy than he thought he was going to be.
I love this scene, too, because I call it the Lyle brings the audience up to speed scene, because it's what he does. Like, in case you just haven't been paying close enough attention or missed something or were confused, like, he comes in and he's like, let me get this straight. He's like, you guys stole all this money, came here, took over the town, yada, 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 and now that's what's going on? And he's like, I'll tell you what, there's going to be a new plan. And he's like, now that Lyle's here, Lyle wants half.
And Lyle's first step of the plan is to go break Wayne out of jail, because Laura Flynn Boyle does not know where the cash is, but Wayne does. So Wayne is sitting in his cell with his two deputies. Again, I want to stress, not incompetent, just simple, regular small-town police officers, deputies. Lyle goes to an abandoned house. So he's not like a completely evil guy. He's not causing too much unwanted destruction. But he goes to an abandoned house and sets a fire, which draws one of the deputies to this house, to put the fire out.
Only one cop is left to guard Wayne at the police station, and then it's sort of like the big... I imagine this is like the biggest thing that happened to Red Rock in like a year, you know? So, yeah, like everybody goes over to the fire at the shack, and that lets everyone else sort of sneak back into town undetected.
Like, I really wonder if they should be more aware that like something fishy is going on because there's a fire. They just found out that their sheriff, who I guess they had come to know and love, is not the man he says he is, right? And I wonder if all of this attention should put them on high alert, or if this sort of like clears their quota and makes them say, oh, I guess this is all the craziness, like we can sort of go back to our normal vigilance, because there's no way more crazy things can happen right now.
As soon as they realize something fishy's going on, like the deputies get the letter that Cage writes in the beginning of the movie, like they come in and they even show the letter to Wayne, and at that point they're like, look, we called the FBI, people are coming. And the way I saw it was like it's going to take like a day to get to Red Rock because it's out in the middle of nowhere, you know? So even if they do call for the FBI, it's going to take a while, and it's like, you know, they really can't handle this situation even if they wanted to, right? Like,
they're not equipped to do it.
Yeah.
So there's just the one poor deputy left alone to guard Wayne. Dennis Hopper shows up, comes in all pleasant, asks like a simple question. Then the deputy looks up and he's got a gun in his face and Dennis Hopper blows him away.
Yeah, he just like executes him. As careful as he was with the fire setting, you know, he's like made sure to set a secluded fire and not hurt anyone. He truly like lost all those points where he just murders this poor kid.
Because he's this professional hitman, he knows that he's not gonna be able to break this guy out of prison with this guy here. He just wants to get things done as quickly and efficiently as possible. He knows the fire's not going to rage forever. The quickest solution is just to put a bullet in this guy's head.
Yeah, and they are dealing with high stakes now, you know. It's like we're talking about like $1 million, and you know, you start throwing around that type of money and trigger fingers get a little itchy.
Because we have to say that he's not a good guy. Like, he's a hired hitman, right? He's killed people before. Like, this is not going to be the first person.
Yeah, it's misleading so much because of like what a nice guy he presents himself as, you know? Like, he's the grinning devil. He's dressed in black and all that, but like his persona, like if you met him, like we were saying, like he kind of comes across as like a happy-go-lucky type of character. So it's even scarier that he is so ruthless. He'll shoot you with a smile on his face.
My favorite thing about his character, it goes right along with what you're saying, is that he calls Wayne Wayner, like Wiener. I just love that he's got this like cute little nickname, that he holds all the cards, he has all the power, he's just gonna keep like humiliating this guy in sort of even just like taking his name away from him. I just love that little touch.
Yeah, and he's the one who calls Nick Cage's character Cowboy the whole time.
The four of them now, Cage and Laura Flynn Boyle, are handcuffed in the back seat, or they're tied up with hand ties while Dennis Hopper goes in to free Wayne. But while they're in the police station, Laura Flynn Boyle tells Cage, hey, my keys, which are in your back pocket, have a pocket knife on them. Why don't you cut yourself loose and like, let's get out of here? And so he frees himself, and he's about to get out when Dennis Hopper comes back out. And it's like this moment of almost redemption, almost escape, cut short by professionalness. And again, if he had taken the time to knock this guy out, tie him up, not only does he have to worry about the deputy coming back, which happens right as they're driving away, but he also has to worry about Cage and Laura Flynn Boyle out in the car, possibly making some kind of escape too, right? And so Cage is outside the car, like they're gonna make an escape, they're gonna get away. And Dennis Hopper's like, what do you think you're doing? All right, get back in the car, we're gonna drive.
It's like a repeat of what happened at the hospital. Nick Cage is sort of about to be home free or sort of escape, and then at the hospital, like, the deputies show up. But here, it's like he's about to, you know, take off, and Dennis Hopper shows up, and he's like, whoa, 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 buddy, like where are you going? And I love this because he doesn't like shoot Nick Cage, you know, he doesn't need him for anything, but he makes him the driver. He's like, you're driving now that your hands are free.
If you're gonna have three hostages, or if you killed Nick Cage and have two hostages, it doesn't make the most sense for you to be driving. Like, it makes the most sense for someone else to be driving, that you can control exactly what they're doing and still have your hands free in case things get out of hand. So they're driving away, and there's a little bit of a Racing with the Moon moment. Like, they come to a train, they're not running alongside a train, but they're driving alongside the train. And it's kind of a little bit of a Racing with the Moon moment, and eventually they get past the train, they sort of hop the tracks and drive away, and it gives Dennis Hopper a little bit of a rush. He's like, oh man, you did a great job back there.
That sort of is pumping up Dennis Hopper as, like, now he's going, like, crazy mode, right? Like, he's, like, putting his foot on Cage's foot on the gas pedal, making him go faster and like screaming and hollering, and he's having a great time, you know. And the more they're terrified, like the happier he seems to be. I don't want to say it's like maybe a little out of place, but when they do jump in front of the train and it's sort of like a Dukes of Hazzard slow motion shot. I don't know. It was impressive and stuff, but I mean, they definitely jumped that train, right? Like,
yeah,
it looked real. And I mean, maybe that's why it sort of felt a little out of place to me, because it's like the one major action shot of the whole movie. All of a sudden, they're racing this train, and you don't think they're going to pass it, and then they do, and it's like total Dukes of Hazzard time.
Because that brings up a good point. Like, this movie does a lot on what's probably like a pretty low budget. They have a lot of really great sets, but they don't have a lot of huge action pieces. It's like they have the money just for one big thing, and they're like, all right, well, this is what it's going to be. Getting toward the end of the movie, we're getting toward the scene where there's the final confrontation. This is where we're going to put the money in. This is where everything's going to happen.
Yeah, and it definitely sort of is, it's a good sort of accelerator to get you into the third act, especially like since the third act is going to be in the middle of a cemetery.
And as they're driving away, Dennis Hopper says, you know, where are we going? Where is this money? Wayne, still not really tipping his hand, just says, keep driving, I'll tell you when to turn. But as they're driving, Dennis Hopper's getting a little bit power hungry, a little bit crazy. He starts like mocking and taunting Cage, which seems like a dangerous idea to mock the guy who's driving the car that you're driving in, but hey.
What do you think, Mark? You want a drink?
No, thanks.
Scotch ain't good enough? Oh, I knew a guy like you once. Thought he was better than everybody else. That's it, ain't it, Mike?
Huh?
You think you're better than me, don't you?
Why don't you just blow me?
Oh, you think you're real hot shit, don't you, Mike? Huh? Hey. Hey, cowboy. Who's got the gun? Cowboy?
I almost wondered at a moment if this was supposed to sort of represent Cage's inner psyche. Like, inside his head is, like, this voice screaming at him, you know? Like, all the things Dennis Hopper's saying, like, you're not good enough, you don't deserve it, like, you think you're so hot, like, you think you're the man, and all this. And I kind of got that at just in this moment. That never, you know, I'm not trying to imply that Dennis Hopper's character doesn't exist, or it's like a figment of his imagination, but just in this moment, like, during, you know, we're coming to the climax, I don't know, it kind of dawned on me that they both came out of wars, they're both Marines, and they both took, like, these completely opposite paths in life, you know? So
yeah.
You're almost seeing, like, this could have been him, you know? I don't know. It was kind of an interesting moment. And it just gave me more to watch, you know, instead of just a scene of the guy, like, berating Cage, it just
sure.
kind of added a little more to the scene for me.
And so they eventually do get to that cemetery that Mike was talking about before. Marflin Boyle's just there tied up. Wayne's there tied up. And Cage digs up, because his hands are free, digs up this one grave where there's, like, a lockbox with the money in it. He uncovers it and he pulls it out. They have Wayne go over to open the box and to get the money out, and Dennis Hopper's got a gun on him, and he's like, I'm not going to open this box until you toss that gun. I'm not an idiot. Like, I want some kind of, you know, satisfaction that you're not just going to blow me away as soon as I unlock this thing.
An interesting moment of trust between thieves, right? Dennis Hopper is sort of like, well, we're at the end of the line. We're going to open the money box. You know, I'm going to get my money. Everything is sort of very much assured that he's going to get what he wants. So it was kind of like his hubris, right? Like, he put the gun down and, you know, he really shouldn't have put that gun down.
Wayne opens the box and pulls out the money, but he also pulls out a gun and holds the gun up to Dennis Hopper, forces Dennis Hopper to give him the keys to the car. But as he's getting into the car, Dennis Hopper, in a real sort of badass moment, drops a knife from his sleeve. Like, I guess he just had a knife up his sleeve the whole movie. Throws the knife at Wayne's neck and hits him in the neck, and Wayne shoots off a gun, which alerts the neighbors. Wayne was, I guess, because he still sort of loved his wife, or loves his wife, even though he wants to kill her, he's telling Dennis Hopper not to kill these guys because there's local people around who are going to hear the gunshot and call the cops and just cause trouble. But when he gets hit in the throat with a knife, the gun shoots off, and we see, like, an elderly couple in a cabin nearby. I'm like, oh, it sounds like there's gunshots. So, like, we better call the sheriff.
Yeah, this is just another great scene here. The climax is just, I love it. This is nuts, because I had just seen something similar to this recently. Talk about westerns. I recently watched The Big Gun Down with Lee Van Cleave. A guy brings a knife to a gunfight just like this, and there's sort of like a standoff. One guy's got a gun, one guy's got a knife. And it kind of goes down in a similar situation, and that's all I could think of was like, Dennis Hopper brought a knife to a gunfight, and it worked out for him.
Yeah, he knifes Wayne in the throat, and Cage, like, runs off, right? Dennis Hopper goes to track him down, and they get into a huge fight. Cage ultimately comes out on top. They're wrestling, and he thrusts Hopper's body onto, like, this war memorial. Like, it was sort of weird that the war veteran was done in by war, right? He gets impaled on a bayonet on this statue. Like, I don't know why it's so sharp on the statue, but one war veteran killed the other with a, like, a testament to the war gone by.
Yeah, I just loved how it all came down to the two soldiers at the end.
Yeah.
You have the one Marine from Vietnam and the one Marine from Lebanon, and they both have lived through, like, crazy shit during their service, and it's come down to this hand-to-hand combat, the older generation against the newer generation, you know? And
yeah.
Like, who was trained better, or who's more ferocious, or just, you know, who just wants it more? And yeah, they kept kind of cutting to a shot of that little war memorial, and I was like, oh, someone's gonna, like, get hit with that thing or something, and Dennis Hopper gets impaled. And I love when he's impaled, how he's like, get back here! I'm not done with you yet!
Because you think it's kind of game over for Dennis Hopper, but it turns out that he's not done yet, that Cage comes back sort of victorious, but Laura Flynn Boyle has knocked out Wayne. She's the only one conscious there, and she pulls a gun on Cage, and he's like, hey, like, let's calm down. Like, in a weird sort of sense, we were just partners. Like, let's get back to that. It's good that she has the gun drawn on him, because Dennis Hopper comes up behind Cage, and she shoots and kills him.
Yeah, he comes back for his final scare, sort of like Freddy or Jason, you know? He's like the monster in the horror film. Yeah, that was great. And then he gets pumped full of lead.
She puts like six shots into him. Seems like overkill. I mean, she's just gone through this thing. This is a guy that her husband paid to kill her. It's this very emotional moment. She puts all the bullets that she has in the gun into this guy, and it seems like overkill, but it also seems justified. It's a good thing that she did that, because not too long after this, that exact sequence of events ends up saving Cage's life.
Yeah, her being a little rambunctious with not counting her bullets, you know, it kind of comes back to bite her. And it's sort of something that's come up before, an empty gun saving the Nick Cage character in a way. Vampire's Kiss, and then also Time to Kill, like a empty gun came into play at some point.
Like, she just puts all these bullets into him, and the cops show up. Cage's like, hey, we gotta get out of here now. And once again, there's a train, and now they actually pull a Racing with the Moon, and they're running alongside the train, and they get onto the train. Cage, I think, is just like in such pain from being choked out by Dennis Hopper that he just passes out for a little bit. And he comes to, and Laura Flynn Boyle once again has a gun drawn on him.
Yeah, she just, you know, she's just too greedy. She just wants it all.
She sees a way for her to escape her husband, escape this hitman, and leave the scene again, and sort of set up a new life with at least $500,000 to her name.
And her cue to Cage is like, jump, right? She's like, just jump off the train. You're going to jump, the cops will catch up to you, and you'll take the fall, and she'll just keep riding the rails.
She's not going to, like, save his life, but she will not kill him. She'll let the law deal with him. He just goes over, and he picks up the money and laughs at it, and he's in this position of power because he counted the shots that she put into Dennis Hopper. Does he know that she has no bullets, or at this point, does he just not care?
So I thought he knew only because he's a Marine and he's been keeping, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's probably been keeping, he could probably see if a gun's loaded, maybe. I don't know. I had the sense that he knew it was empty. That's, I don't know how he could have known or anything like that, but I didn't know it was empty, but I got the sense after she fired and nothing happened that he was pretty confident that nothing was going to happen to him.
Because he's never really been suicidal in this movie, but it also, it makes you think, like, if, like, it gets to a point where, like, just one thing after another, like, nothing is going his way, and it's almost like, well, like, I just can't, like, if this is what my life is going to be from now on, I just don't want to deal with it.
Could just be that I don't care at this point anymore. If you're going to shoot me, shoot me. But I'm going to take this money and, you know, you're not going to have it kind of situation.
And in the ultimate power move, she's just shooting all these, like, empty rounds at him, like nothing's coming out. And he just walks over the side of the train with the bag of money and just lets it all go. He tells her to jump and just pushes her out of the train, and he's off to start a new life somewhere else.
He grabs her and, like, throws Mama from the train, you know? Like, he's like, get out of here! That was aggressive, but to me it was like, well, he's finally seen through all of her bullshit and all that, you know what I mean? Like, she's not a good person. She's shown her true colors, so she...
Yeah.
So it's totally fine. She's gonna survive. He knows he can throw her off a train in such a way that she'll maybe just have a couple bruises. Cage is finally going to leave Red Rock forever. I have a feeling he's never coming back to this town.
Because there's one visual thing that we sort of touched on but never explicitly said, that he leaves this town probably 4 or 5 times this movie. That this town has caused him nothing but problems. He made that one bad decision to say he was somebody else. All he really wants to do is leave the town. And they show the sign, now leaving Red Rock. And then, without fail, 5 or 10 minutes later, he's seeing the sign, welcome to Red Rock. Like, he just can't escape this town.
There was definitely, like, 1 minute or two somewhere where he was drawn back to the town for, like, the third time, where I was actually wondering if there was something supernatural going on here. Like, is he just not allowed to leave Red... Does no one ever leave Red Rock alive?
He's going to be destined to live the rest of his life, however long it is, whether it's a couple days or the rest of his years, in this town. But luckily for Cage, has his little bit of money, says adios Red Rock, heads on out.
Adios Red Rock.
And that pretty much does it for Red Rock West.
I don't know that we ever return to the Western genre. It satisfies the itch for a Cage Western. I mean, I would love to see him as, you know, the man with no name, or one of those, like, the old real true gritty Westerns. But this is a nice little substitute in a career where we didn't know that he was necessarily going to have any Westerns.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I mean, right in the beginning, he puts on that white shirt, and it's sort of got the Western stitching, or what you typically might see on what's sold as cowboy shirts, you know? And,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool, we're getting, like, a little touch of it here, you know? He's from Texas, he's wearing the boots, he's, you know? So you're right, like, it was good to, you know, even if it was more of, like, a modern Western, it was still nice to see him sort of navigate, like, the Western genres, sort of a lot of the tropes of a Western.
Absolutely. So next up on Cage Club, we have Deadfall, and we will hope to uncover the mystery of why the DVD case and the DVD slipcover have completely different images.
That is just hyper confusing.
But go to cageclub.me to read all of our reviews for all these movies that we've talked about. You can listen to all the podcasts on there. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. All sorts of fun stuff. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
We'll see you next time on Cage Club.